This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
This is Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. Brent Blue, he is the organizer of ThroughTheFence.org. We're running another story about authorities coming down on a through-the-fence agreement. However, this one is a little bit different. It's the TSA is involved rather than the FAA. Brent, maybe you can explain the difference between the two to us.
Well, what happened at Punta Gordo was the folks that have through-the-fence access have access via what amounts to like a garage door opener. And that opens a gate on the taxiway in which they can taxi through the gate. And just like car access to airports, they're supposed to wait on the other side of the gate until the gate closes before they continue on. And one pilot, one day, didn't do that, and the TSA, in their normal style, overreacted and said from now on, the FBO has to send a lineman down to open and close the gate for all the airplanes. Now, this is a different issue from the FAA's issue, in that the FAA's issue about through-the-fence agreements has to do with control of the surrounding airport properties. And they have 4 points. Two of them are safety and security, but those have been relatively minor points because they really can be controlled by gating. In the Punta Gordo situation, the area to which the person was taxiing is another gated area. So in other words, in order to even get where he taxied his airplane, you have to pass through a car gate with an ID. So to some extent, the TSA really overreacted because there was no threat to security in any way in this situation.
Okay, but can the FAA use this as part of its rationale for what it's trying to do with through-the-fence agreements all over the U.S.?
Well, I think the FAA can use almost anything they want to because so far they've already been irrational about what they've used. What we have done and what's pending for us are two Freedom of Information Act requests that are actually due the end of this week. The FAA did ask for an extension, but we didn't grant them an extension because the FAA didn't grant an extension for the comment period on the issue. But the two requests that we put in the Freedom of Information Act, one was specifically for all the noise complaints for the past 10 years from people who had hangar residences or hangar homes on airports that complained about noise. The FAA says that one of the major reasons why they don't want hangar homes are noise complaints, and if that is one of the major reasons, then they should have documentation of all these noise complaints, and I don't think they have that. The second thing is the second FOIA was a request for the data used to support their new 700-page airport compliance manual. That airport compliance manual is the one that basically says no through-the-fence agreements in Chapter 20 of any kind, and if there's no real reason that they can point to that says why this is a valid and substantiated ruling, and so we've asked for the data they've used for that decision. And to give you an example, that kind of ruling threatens Quest Aircraft, the manufacturer of the Kodiak, up in Sandpoint, because they're on private property and have a through-the-fence agreement, and they've been told that they'll lose their through-the-fence agreement if this airport compliance manual is enforced. So it's got to be if it wasn't so serious, it'd be silly.
Okay, well, is there a chance that history's been made and the TSA and the FAA are talking about this and there's some complicity here?
Well, I don't think that the TSA and the FAA get along that well, quite honestly. And at Oshkosh, the FAA administrator, Babbitt, actually mentioned that he really had not had any discussions with the TSA of significance because the TSA does not have a head yet. There's no administrator of the TSA that's been appointed at this point. So, I don't know where this is coming from, and my bet is it was probably some local office of the TSA that made this decision, and that there probably wasn't any consultation with the FAA in any way.
Okay, you confronted Babbitt about the situation at AOPA. Has there been any dialogue between you and the FAA since then?
It's a little bit misleading to say I confronted him. What I did was to make sure he was asked the question about the through-the-fence agreements during the press part of the AOPA meeting. But the only contact we have had has been basically the FAA's request to delay the return of the FOIA documents, which, as I said before, we did not grant that delay. So we should have some documentation by the end of the week, and once we have that documentation, we will obviously put out some information to the press about what the FAA has used to make these rules, because we really don't think there is much that they've used to make these rules, because the rules don't make any sense.
Okay, well, we'll be following it, of course. Brent, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time today.
Well, Russ, thank you, Russ. We appreciate it. It's always a good time talking with you.
Okay, Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.